hear it first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com and FirstAmendmentRadio.net.
Day, everyone, everywhere, and special greetings to all those seated in heavenly places in Yahshua, our Messiah. You're listening to Cross the Border. Today, we're going to continue our trek through the Bible, and we're starting on a new book today. I'm going back to the Old Testament, back about, I guess about 3,000 years ago. As far as I can tell, the dating of the man we're reading about. Yes, the book of Job. There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job. Now, the land of Uz, of course, the land of Uz is not the land of Oz. That's a different book. Anyway, Uz was a son of Aram, who was a son of Lud, who was the son of Arphaxad, who was the son of Ashur, who was the son of Elam, who was the son of Shem, who was the son of Noah. Now, I don't know if Job was exactly the name, exactly a son of Uz, but he lived in the land of Uz, it says. And that would be mean that he was of the tribe of Uz. His name was Job. And the scripture says, and that man was perfect and upright, and one that feared God and eschewed evil. Yeah, I'd like to be able to say that that would describe me. Now, perfect and upright. Is anybody really reached perfection? Is anyone expected to be absolutely perfect, say, as the Messiah was perfect? No. You know, we all have sinned, even Job, the perfect man. I believe a better way to look at this, to be perfect in Messiah, would be to be perfected, to be in the process of being perfected. One who doesn't turn back from that process of being perfected. One who has no reservation to sin. Yes, we all sin. We all fall short of the glory of God. And if we want to be exacting in our speak, no, there's none that is perfect. So when the scripture says that he was perfect, it means that he was walking as perfectly as a man could after the Almighty. So he was perfect and upright and one that feared God and eschewed evil. So we get a description of what this means to be perfect and upright here. He was one that feared God. He feared the Almighty. And I have to admit, I have to say that there was a time that I didn't fear God in my life. And for all those people who are into the name here, the Elohim, being interpreted God in English. He feared God. He feared the Almighty. And he eschewed evil. Do you eschew evil? I do. I hate it. I don't want to do it. I don't like it around me. And it grieves me that I have any evil in me or in my life. It grieves me that I'm even tempted to sin, let alone that I will stumble. I may fall. I may slip and sin in my mortal life. and I have to agree with the Apostle Paul, that it is no longer I who sin, but sin that dwelleth in me. See, because Paul, I believe, was like Job. He was one that feared God and eschewed evil. So you've put away all the filthiness, all the lusts of the flesh. You put away the fornication and the adultery. You put away all of the habits and the drugs and the cigarettes and the over-drinking and, you know, whatever. All of the things that would control your life. You have eschewed evil because you fear the Almighty. And the fear of God keeps me on the straight and narrow. You know, when I see people out there struggling or lost in sin, and I think, because I fear God, I think, there but for the grace of God go I. That could be me. I can't let it slip. I can't purposely. I can't have a reservation to sin. I can't say, oh, just today I'm going to enjoy this sin because I fear God. That could be me. I don't want to be lost. I fear God and I eschew evil, like Job. Now, Job was a son of Shem. He was a true Shemite. You know, the form of the word has changed today. They say Semite, but what it means to be anti-Semitic today has absolutely nothing to do with being a true Shemite from the root of where that word came from. Job was a true Shemite. It says, and there were born unto him 7 sons and 3 daughters. His substance also was 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, and 500 yoke of oxen, and 500 she-asses, and very great household, and a very great household, so that this man was the greatest of all the men of the East. Well, if I had, even today, if I had 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, or let's say horses, because I'm in the northern continent of the Americas, and 500 yoke of oxen, and 500 she-asses, I would be a very wealthy man, even today by today's standards. So he was a very wealthy man. And you know what? I notice it says to him that there was born unto him 7 sons and 3 daughters. We don't get any inclination here as to whether his daughters or his sons feared God and eschewed evil as he did. I would hope that they did, or at least some of them did. So he was a very rich man. He was the greatest of all the men of the East. And his sons went and feasted in their houses, every one his day, and set and called their 3 sisters to eat and drink with them. And it was so, when the days of their feastings were gone about, that Job sent and sanctified them, and rose up early in the morning, and offered burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For Job said, it may be that my sons have sinned, and cursed God in their hearts. Thus did Job continually. You know, I love my children too, my grandchildren. And there's no guarantee that they're going to follow me, that they're going to make the resurrection of life. I hope and I pray for them, but I can't run their lives. I can't lord it over them, because after all, notwithstanding they are my sons and daughters and grandsons and granddaughters, they are also my fellow man. And hopefully my brothers and sisters in Messiah. But I can't live for them. I can pray for them. And hope. I hope. I'll do the best I can. I can do my part. And that's what Job is doing here. He's not lording it over his children, trying to control them. Because he knows that they belong to the Almighty. He had a job to do. We all have a job to do as parents and grandparents. Let us do it with our might, as we're commanded to do as parents, to nurture them up in the fear and the admonition of the Lord, as the Authorized King James Version says. But he says perhaps. He says perhaps they've cursed God in their hearts. Perhaps they have sinned. So he rises up, he offers burnt offerings for them according to the number of them all. So you see that Job here is following the sacrificial law as it was handed down from Adam and Eve even. This is, I don't know, this is before, I believe, the children of Israel and Moses, or Abraham, and I believe it's before that time, or it's about that time, just leading up to that time. But they had the law before that. Even Noah, he knew the difference. There was a distinction between the clean and the unclean animals. Go back to Cain and Abel. They made the sacrifice. Of course, well, Abel did, and whoever else wanted to please the Almighty made the right sacrifice. Cain decided that the Almighty, that Yahuwah would have to accept the fruit of his hands rather than the sacrifice that was required. But Job, we see here, he does the required sacrifice even for his children. And maybe there's a clue there. Maybe his children should have been making their own sacrifice. I don't know. We'll continue. There are questions there that rise up. They went and feasted in their houses, everyone his day. Not sure I understand what that means, everyone his day. And sent and called for their three sisters to eat and drink with them. So it looks like they were having a big party if they called for the three sisters to come and eat and drink with them. And it's not wrong to feast and enjoy life once in a while and get together with your family. As a matter of fact, that would be a good thing. Better than going out to the bar and eating and drinking and feasting with strangers. Yes, what a drear and dire situation that is for people that participate in that type of party. So when their days of feasting were gone about, Job set and sanctified them and rose up early in the morning. He sent and sanctified them. So he sent for them, perhaps, sanctified them, set them apart, and he offered burnt offerings for them. Because he said, perhaps it may be that my sons have sinned, curse God in their hearts. Thus did Job continually. So this was a practice of this man, to pray, make sacrifices for his children. Now, there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before Yahuwah. And we have the name there, so I said it that time. In the Authorized King James Version, it says, before the Lord. And Satan came also among them. Now, I want you to notice here, there is a doctrine, and you know, we have to pay attention to little things like this as we go through the scripture. And I spent a half hour with my good friend Tom last week, and we were attacking the Nephilim doctrine. Okay? Now, there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, before Yahuwah. Now, we see that demonstrated throughout the scripture. The sacrifice, the first sacrifice, was given there, and by the great high priest who made that sacrifice and clothed Adam and Eve with the skins, right? Animal was sacrificed, or several animals were sacrificed as a temporary covering. And then we see in the story of Cain and Abel that Cain and Abel did this. There was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, before Yahuwah. So Cain and Abel did that, okay? And we know Abel brought the proper sacrifice, and Cain brought the wrong sacrifice. Because without the shedding of blood, there is no remission of sins. So we have a demonstration there in the scripture. There was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord. Now, these sons of God are the children of men. And this verse here tells us that. Because it says, and Satan came also. Oh, by the way, Satan came. There's a difference there. There's a differentiation there. We have a separation between the sons of God who came to present themselves before Yahuwah, and Satan came also among them. See, Satan is not them. Satan came among them. Satan is not one of them, but he came among them. And why did Satan come among them? Well, I'll tell you. The story of Cain and Abel tells us how Satan came among them. Defiant, disobedient. They were listening to the enemy, just as Eve had done in the beginning. She listened to the enemy. Of course, it appears to me from the book of Genesis that Adam and Eve both repented. That's the testimony of the Word. That's the way I read it. That isn't explicit in the text, but the evidence is strong enough that I can rely on that. So I don't believe that the sons of God are the same thing as the children of men who are called. I mean, I don't believe that Satan is the same, that the children of men are called the sons of God and Satan is called the son of God, or the fallen angels are called the sons of God. I believe that there is a differentiation here. So if I read it, now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, before Yahuwah, the Almighty. And that day was that day they were required to come and bring a sacrifice. Later codified by Moses in the wilderness, when the law was given to the set-apart nation, that called-out nation, Israel, the 12 tribes. So later it was codified, not much later, but from where we're at with Job. And we see that happen with Cain and Abel. There was a day. There was an appointed time, basically. And it says, and Satan came also among them. So he's not one of them, but he came among them. I guess you could take it both ways, but I see demonstrated by Scripture. Because what I want to do is I want to use the Scripture to interpret the Scripture as best as I can. Now, people may agree with me. They said Satan came among them because he was one of them. Well, no, really. Was Satan required to bring a sacrifice? You know, see, that doesn't fit in the demonstration. But I see how Satan came among them because Satan came with Cain. Cain was listening to the enemy. Cain rebelled. He said, not your way, Lord, but my way. You know, and what did the Messiah say? He said, not my will, but thine be done. Cain said the opposite. He was rebellious. He was under the influence. Satan came with him. So we got a spiritual thing happening here, too. Because there's something happening on the spiritual plane. Because that's where Satan is as the fallen angel. He is in that spiritual plane. And he is also in heaven. Was he cast down yet? No, I believe he was cast down when the Messiah triumphed over him on the cross. I believe that's when he was cast down. I believe that's when he said that he had little time. So he goes about as a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. I believe he lost his position in heaven at that time. That's my belief. And I probably need to work on that, you know, solidifying that position a little bit more. But I feel that's correct. But I'm not going to say, thus saith the Lord, on that one. But that's my belief anyway, that Satan was cast down from heaven at that time when the Messiah gained the victory over death, when he proved by going into the grave and that death could not hold him because death had no claim on him, he took the keys of hell and death from the enemy and he set the captives free. I believe that's when Satan was cast down from heaven. And you can read about that, I believe, in the Revelation and several other instances in the Scripture to put it in a place in our timeline. So anyway, back to our narrative here with Job. The day when the sons of God came to present themselves before Yahuwah, the Lord, and Satan came also among them. And Yahuwah said unto Satan, whence comest thou? You know? And Satan answered and said, answered the Lord and said, from going to and fro in the earth and from walking up and down in it. Yes, he goes to and fro on the earth. But I believe that he's on the earth now and that he's trapped on the earth with him, with his angels. And the Lord said to Satan, hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil? And Satan answered the Lord. Now here we have the, what is he called? He's called the accuser of the brethren. The accuser of the brethren. Now, when the Messiah's blood was applied to our account, after that, he can't accuse us anymore. Because we have the application of that blood on us that are righteous, that fear God and eschew evil today. We have the application of the blood of Messiah. But that doesn't mean that we're not tested, as Job was. Satan answered the Lord and said, doth Job fear God for naught? Now, there's something going on in the spiritual realm here. You know, we get this conversation in English. I'm not sure how that they were speaking English. I doubt that. It's kind of hard to articulate what I'm saying right now. And perhaps we'll attack it a little bit better when we get back from the break. Because I'm trying to apply this in a way that we can, in a way that it applies to our lives today and the trials and tribulations that we go through. I'll be back in a few minutes. You're listening to Cross the Border.
Rock my rock and my You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com worldwide. Freedom is never free. We need your support today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
The program you are listening to is 100% sponsored by you, the listener, on this First Amendment Rights Media channel. You will notice that there are few commercials on this radio network. There's a good reason for that. Corporate advertising dollars come with strings that limit program content. So without your help, these programs cannot continue on internet or our several affiliates. If you benefit by the educational law programs, we ask you to give. If you are admonished or nurtured by the Bible and ministry programs, we ask you to give. If some voice a cause that you are passionate about, we ask you to give. If you believe in any of these, we ask you to support them as you would a missionary on a continual basis, as if giving a tithe for missionary radio. These programs are not commercially viable and must be supported by those faithful to the cause of truth. Look for the button to sponsor your favorite programs at our listen and schedule pages on the internet. Then, when you subscribe, we will send you the last quarterly MP3 CD of that program immediately, and continue to do so with each new quarter. We will also give you unlimited archive access to all of our programs. We're asking you to give much less than a tithe, so that you may also send support directly to a particular program host, cause, and anywhere else the Spirit may lead you. Do all to the glory of our God and Creator, for His holy nation, the only kingdom that will last forever. Thank you for listening.
Introducing the most efficient gravity filter available. You know, if you were to throw 100 ball bearings at a magnet, most would bounce off. But if you placed them on the magnet, all would stick. The same principle applies in water filtration. Most filtration systems force water through the filter at 60 to 90 PSI, causing water molecules to race through the filter in less than a second. The Berkey Light is different. Water molecules take minutes to pass through the torturous path of the self-sterilizing filters. This allows the proprietary media formulation to remove and reduce pathogenic bacteria, cysts, chemicals, herbicides, pesticides, organic solvents, foul tastes, odors, heavy metals, and nitrates. It is so powerful it purifies raw, untreated water from remote lakes, streams, and stagnant ponds.
Get the advanced Berkey Light Purifier by calling First Amendment Radio at 559-781-3773 or order on the web at firstamendmentradio.com. Not yet available in Iowa.
Welcome back. You're listening to Cross the Border. We're in Job. We got to verse 6 of chapter 1. And we have here as the accuser of the brethren, you know, coming before the Almighty and accusing Job. And I guess that's the best way that I can put it. How that works today, I don't know. I know we have trials and tribulations that we are tried by and proved by. And I believe that the trials and tribulation are for us more than anybody else. Now, Job goes through a severe trial here. So let's jump into Job's severe trial. And this is just the beginning. And Satan says, "Doth Job fear God for naught? Hast not thou made a hedge about him? And about his house, and about all that he hath on every side? Thou hast blessed the work of his hands, and his substance is increased in the land. But put forth thine hand now, and touch all that he hath, and he will curse thee to thy face." And the Lord said unto Satan, Behold, all that he hath is in thy power. Only upon himself put not forth thine hand. So Satan went forth from the presence of Yahuwah. And there was a day when his sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their eldest brother's house. And there came a messenger unto Job and said, The oxen were plowing, and the asses feeding beside them. And the Sabaeans fell upon them and took them away. Yea, they have slain the servants with the edge of the sword, and I only am escaped alone to tell thee. While he was yet speaking, there came also another, and the fire of God is fallen from heaven, and hath burned up the sheep and the servants, and consumed them, and I only am escaped alone to tell thee. While he was yet speaking, I'll tell you, Satan don't mess around, does he? If he has power to kill, steal, and destroy, he will use every bit of that power. And so we have the promise. We don't have to worry about this, I guess, that he will lay on us no more than we can bear. And perhaps we're not as strong as Job, because I don't know how Job could stand up under all of this that's coming upon him. And it's just beginning. Now, I question myself, would I be able to stand? What choice would I have? You know, if I lose everything in this life, all I have left is what comes after this life. Something to think about. And while he was yet speaking, there also came another and said, The Chaldeans made out three bands and fell upon the camels and have carried them away. Yea, and slain the servants with the edge of the sword, and I only am escaped alone to tell thee. And he was yet speaking, and there came also another, and said, Thy sons and thy daughters were eating and drinking wine in their eldest brother's home. And behold, there came a great wind from the wilderness, and smote the four corners of the house, and it fell upon the young men, and they are dead, and I only am escaped alone to tell thee. Then Job arose and rent his mantle and shaved his head and fell down upon the ground and worshipped. And he said, Naked I came. Naked came I out of my mother's womb, and naked shall I return thither. The Lord gave, and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. And of course here he uses the name, the actual name, the 3068. So Yahuwah gave and Yahuwah taken away. Blessed be the name of Yahuwah. That's his, in all this Job sinned not, nor charged God foolishly. And I can relate to that a little bit. My life has been no bed of roses. And I remember saying those same words after a very hard life and a lot of trials and tribulations. I knew that was going to happen. Hold on a second. Many trials and tribulations. I found myself a faithful wife, and everything was going great. Yeah, that's right. And I was falling more in love with this woman every day. And then she got pregnant, and we both rejoiced. This is a true story. But then in the third month of the pregnancy, she died with my child. And I said these words, The Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. And still today, I wonder why sometimes, but I don't have that answer. And I come up with the answer. The answer is sin. You know, perhaps not mine, but the very sin that entered in at the beginning. That's why all evil happens. And so the occasion has taught me to hate sin even more. not to curse God because I lost, because I suffered a great loss in my life, but to worship Him and to look forward to the promises of the Almighty. If I lose everything in this life, it matters not. And here I think Satan moved foolishly by taking everything all at once. Maybe if he took things incrementally away from Job, a little at a time, he could have worked on him slowly. But to take everything all at once so that all a man has is left is what comes after this life. It seems kind of like a foolish move. But anyway, after all these things, after suffering this terrible great loss of everything, Job sinned not, nor charged God foolishly. Now, the trial I went through 5 years ago that I just relayed to you, if it had happened 20 years ago, well, maybe not. Maybe I would have sinned. Maybe I would have charged God foolishly. Yes, as a matter of fact, I know I would have, because I did a lot of foolish things. And I blamed God for a lot of things that happened to me early in my walk. Let's go to Job chapter 2 and verse 1. Again, there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before Yahuwah, before the Lord. And Satan came also among them to present himself before the Lord. And the Lord said to Satan, "From whence comest thou?" And Satan answered the Lord and said, "From going to and fro in the earth, and from walking up and down in it." And the Lord said to Satan, "Hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil, and still he holdeth fast his integrity, although thou movest me against him to destroy him without cause?" And Satan answered the Lord and said, "Skin for skin, yea, all that a man hath will he give for his life. But put forth thine hand now and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will curse thee to thy face." So here, Job's already lost everything, but he still has his health. And the Lord said to Satan, "Behold, he is in thine hand, but save his life." So you can do anything, but you can't kill him. I hope this conversation never happens about me. Oh, man, I would not want to be in his shoes. But I guess we all come to that point where, you know, we're going to lose our life and at least a few minutes before we die. But, yeah, I know there are people that suffer terrible in their flesh before they die. Some suffer for a short time. Some suffer for years. And some for just a few minutes, perhaps. And perhaps the ones that are really blessed, they live to a ripe old age and they lay down and go to sleep and just never get back up. Skin for skin, yea, all that a man hath will he give for his life. So he says, yeah, everything but his life. So Satan went forth from the presence of Yahuwah, the Lord, and smote Job with sore boils from the sole of his foot to his crown. And he took him a potsherd to scrape himself withal. And he sat down among the ashes. And it just hurts to read that. That the only relief that he could have was to take a piece of broken pottery and scrape the sores. Yes. Then said his wife to him, "Dost thou still retain thine integrity? Curse God and die." Curse God and die? Yikes. I don't know. If Job was a righteous and upright, he feared God and eschewed evil, who was this woman that he was married to have so little understanding, to live with this man, and to have so little understanding to say, "Curse God and die"? Dost thou still retain thine integrity? But he said to her, "Thou speakest as one of the foolish women speaketh. What? Shall we receive good at the hand of God? And shall we not receive evil?" Yeah. You know, the rain falls on the just and the unjust alike. We went through the Proverbs. We went through Ecclesiastes. Job expresses it here perfectly. Shall we receive good at the hand of God? And shall we not receive evil? In all this, did not Job sin with his lips? I have to say, Job is, from what I read here, he's more upright than I am. Now when Job's three friends heard of all this evil that was come upon him, they came every one from his own place. Eliphaz the Temanite, and Bildad the Shuhite, and Zophar the Naamathite. For they had made an appointment together to come to mourn with him and to comfort him. Good friends. You're sick, they're going to come and mourn with you and try to comfort you, right? And when they lifted up their eyes afar off, and they knew him not, they lifted up their voice and wept. And they rent every one his mantle and sprinkled dust upon their heads toward heaven. So they sat down with him upon the ground 7 days and 7 nights. And none spake a word unto him, for they saw that his grief was very great. Sounds like pretty good friends, huh? I don't think I have three friends that would come and sit and fast and pray with me and mourn with me for 7 days and 7 nights. Of course, Job was an unusual man. Must have been. And he was a very rich man, too. But all his riches were gone. He lost everything now. And now he's losing his health. After this, 7 days of silence, Job, they didn't even recognize him. These boils from head to toe. I mean, he's scraping them with a potsherd. It's unrecognizable. But they knew it was him. They rent their mantle, and they sat on the ground, and they threw dust up in the air. And they mourned with him 7 days. After this, Job opened his mouth and cursed his day. And Job spake and said, let the day perish wherein I was born, and the night in which it was said, there is a man-child conceived. Let that day be darkness, and let not God regard it from above, neither let the light shine upon it. Well, you know what he's saying. He's saying, man, what I'm suffering now is so grievous, I wish I had never been born. It would have been better if I had never been born. I've had those fleeting thoughts at times in my life, but they were fleeting thoughts. And of course, what comes with them is the temptation to suicide. Yes, I could say I've met that demon, but I didn't entertain him. That's where you get into trouble. And that's where drugs come in. You know, people that drink and do alcohol or in these methamphetamines and all these drugs. You'll find that usually those drugs accompany suicide or murder. You know, murder and suicide are the same sin. That's why a lot of murder-suicide goes together, whether accompanied with drugs or not. But this is the beginning of it. I wish I'd never been born. It's that bad. Let that day be darkness. Let not God regard it from above, neither let the light shine upon it. Let darkness and the shadow of death stain it. Let a cloud dwell upon it. Let the blackness of the day terrify it. As for that night, let darkness seize upon it. Let it not be joined unto the days of the year. Let it not come into the number of the months. Lo, let that night be solitary. Let no joyful voice come therein. Let them curse it that curse the day, who are ready to raise up their mourning. Let the stars of the twilight thereof be dark. Let it look for light, but have none. Neither let it see the dawning of the day, because it shut not up the doors of my mother's womb, nor hid sorrow from mine eyes. Why died I not from the womb. Why was I even born? I should have been stillborn. That's what he's saying. Why did I not give up the ghost when I came out of the belly? If this is the end, what was it all for? You know? Yes, the emotions run deep. I mean, it's hard when you're in a situation, some situations, to control your emotions. And it's not wrong to succumb to them at times. It's good to feel things. It's good to feel good emotions. And it's good to feel bad emotions. You're alive. But do the emotions rule? Or do you rule the emotions? Why died I not from the womb? Why did I not give up the ghost? Why did the knees prevent? Why did the knees prevent me? Or why did the breast that I should suck? For now should I have lain still and been quiet. He's saying, I wouldn't be suffering this now. I would be still and quiet in the grave if I hadn't been born. If I had died in the womb. Or if I had died immediately at birth. He's saying, now should I have lain still and been quiet. I should have slept then. Had I been at rest. Then had I been at rest. With kings and councils of the earth, which built desolate places for themselves, or with princes that had gold, who filled their houses with silver, or as an hidden untimely birth, I had not been, as infants which never saw light. There the wicked cease from troubling, and there the weary be at rest. There the prisoners rest together. They hear not the voice of the oppressor. And he's talking about death, of course. The small and the great are there. And the servant is free from his master. Wherefore is light given to him that is in misery, and life unto the bitter in soul, which long for death, but it cometh not, and dig for it more than hid treasures, which rejoice exceedingly, and are glad when they can find the grave. Why is light given to a man whose way is hid, from whom God hath hedged in? For my sighing cometh before I eat, and my roarings are poured out like waters. For the thing which I greatly feared is come upon me, and that which I was afraid of is come unto me. I was not in safety, neither had I rest, neither was I quiet. Yet trouble came. Job, chapter 4 and verse 1. Then Eliphaz, the Temanite, answered him and said, if we essay to commune with thee, wilt thou be grieved? But who can withhold himself from speaking? Behold, thou hast instructed many, and thou hast strengthened the weak hands. Thy words have upholden him that was falling, and thou hast strengthened the feeble knees. And they're testifying to the type of man that Job was. That's what he's saying. You have given so much, in other words. But now it has come upon thee, and thou faintest. It toucheth thee, and thou art troubled. Is not thus thy fear, thy confidence, thy hope, the uprightness of thy ways? Remember, I pray thee, who ever perished being innocent? Or where were the righteous cut off? He's saying, how can you be innocent? How could this come upon you, being innocent? If you're righteous, why are you being cut off? That's what Eliphaz is saying here. Even as I have seen, they that plow iniquity and sow wickedness reap the same. That's a true saying. Whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. But doesn't evil come on the good? Do not the innocent suffer? By the blast of God they perish, and by the breath of the nostrils they are consumed. The roaring of the lion, and the voice of the fierce lion, and the teeth of the young lions are broken, and the old lion perisheth for lack of prey, and the stout lion's whelps are scattered abroad. You're listening to Cross the Border. We'll pick up here when we get back. Take time to visit my website, crosstheborder.org. Make sure that you subscribe there to my blog, and let me hear from you. We'll be back.
Memories too hard to find, dancing like shadows.